Some vendors say you can become an MSSP in a day. We can make it happen in 30 minutes. Stay tuned for these stories on MSP Dispatch.
Today's episode is presented by Rejection Con.
Rejection Con is upon us. It's almost here, December 12, 13, 14. Go to rejectioncon.com. Right there is where it is. That is the link. It's a pay what you can model. Do you got $0? Come on in. But I'm asking you to give more. Why would Wes be asking you to pay more? 100% of conference pass proceeds go to the Rural Tech Fund. Investing in underprivileged communities inside the United States. Revolutionizing the lives of children and their families by giving them a new hope and a new future. Rejection Con is about the rejected ones. It's about the square pegs and round holes. Look at some of these talks right here. We've got so many awesome talks, never heard before content. So get in on this. RejectionCon.com, December 12, 13, 14. I'll see you there.
Good morning and welcome to the December 8th episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I'm Maria Rossini, joined as always, sometimes, by my co-host, Mr. Jason Slagle. How you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You're notably not Tony Francisco. You're the more bearded cousin of Tony Francisco.
I kind of want to see Tony with a beard. I'm not going to lie.
I do too. One day he's going to grow a beard and we're all going to be completely shocked and awed.
Yeah.
But thank you for covering. Tony had a thing today, so he couldn't come in. So we figured you'd come in and replace him. And given the number of security stories we have today, you're probably the best person to have on here, man.
Yeah, it's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah. Are you speaking at a Rejection Con next week?
I am not. Wes did hassle me a tiny bit to submit a talk, but I shockingly or unshockingly have not ever actually had a talk rejected. So I felt it would have been disingenuous if I submitted something that obviously had not been rejected.
Damn. Well, now that I feel a little worse for myself.
I haven't submitted that many, right? Like,
that's true. Yeah. Yeah, no, I also did not submit. I honestly hear myself on stage more than enough. I'm curious to see it as a bystander, just watch everybody else's talks.
Yeah,
me should too. Be enjoyable.
I mean, I have coming up, right? Like, I have a 4-hour workshop I'm doing for CodeMash. That if I'm going to spend time developing something, it probably should be that.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah,
and if you want to see, if you want to register for Rejection Con, the links will be below. You can pay as little or as much as you want, and 100% of the ticket sales go to a charity. So it goes directly to the charity. Like, there's no excuse.
Yeah, the receipt.
So check it out.
The receipt. I did our MSP pass yesterday, and the receipt came from the charity. And I was like, oh, yes. There's not even a middleman here.
But for now, we got some news. So let's get into it.
In our first story, Windows and Linux devices are vulnerable to a new logo fail firmware attack, brought to us by Dan Gooden from Ars Technica. Binarily, researchers have uncovered a critical firmware attack dubbed Logo Fail, impacting virtually all Windows and Linux systems. Unveiled at the Black Hat Security Conference, the proof of concept exploit uses about 24 long-standing but recently discovered vulnerabilities in the UEFI software. LogoFail targets the early boot process, hijacking image parsers to replace logos with malware-laden files. This allows attackers to remotely execute code before security measures activate, taking full control of the device and bypassing protections like secure boot. With complete access to memory disk in the operating system, hackers can steal data, monitor activity, and install malicious programs undetected. Affected devices include x64 and ARM CPUs from major manufacturers like Intel, AMD, Lenovo, Dell, and HP. While patches are available, they vary by manufacturer, making immediate system updates crucial. This is fun, Ray. I can't wait for the days that we get WebP in our bootloaders.
I mean, what is it? This is killing me because you don't normally get ARM, these bugs with ARM, right? Like, you don't normally get these RCEs with ARM.
This isn't actually in that code, right? This is all pre-boot stuff. And okay. Honestly, right, like the code base is almost certainly very identical there, right? Like you're going to use these people, they're linking in a library from somewhere that's doing this image processing, and that library likely exists for both ARM and Intel, right? So they would not have different versions of it. This is essentially, to me, a supply chain attack.
So, but we have the important part. We have logo fail. I mean, yeah, we got to have the name, right? We have to have the name for all these vulnerabilities. But does this fall under the sky is falling, or is this just one more thing to make sure nobody has interactive access?
I mean, this is ring zero, right? So like you can, this is full control of the hardware. So you can't even detect it likely at the OS level. It is probably sky is falling from a persistence standpoint, because if you can get access to the machine and with the ability to write things into the UEFI firmware, right, which isn't necessarily always the case. Linux maybe a little bit easier than on Windows, because a lot of times that stuff's just mounted or it's just mountable. You can put things in a place where even if they remediate the immediate exploit you've done to them, they can maintain persistence via your bootloader, and then they can just compromise you again. And patching that once it's done is actually relatively difficult to do.
So let me understand it, make sure I understand the order of events. You get some kind of bootloader downloaded from some other method, right? Phishing email, nefarious link, blah, blah, blah. That updates your bootloader, that makes your next boot sequence vulnerable. And because you can't see that from the OS level.
Yeah.
If you could patch, if you could apply the malware via while the OS is running, why can't you monitor for it or patch against it?
Yeah. So it's the case where the firmware controls all of this stuff, right? So if you can load that early, then you can, in theory, patch and do things that should blind the operating system from the changes you've made, right? So you could patch the kernel as part of boot time to return the correct hash values, for instance, for the files in the UEFI firmware. This reminds me a lot of copy protection that Sony did years ago. If you look it up, where they essentially were installing a bootloader or a rootkit as part of their
That was Lenovo, wasn't it?
It was Sony. Okay. Yeah, Sony had some copy protection that was essentially a rootkit, and it blinded the OS so you couldn't even see that it was there. You can do the same sort of thing here. And the biggest problem to me is that the code, in many cases, the code that can actually update that firmware runs in that firmware. So this can be relatively tricky to undo once it's done.
So let's be productive, because I'm the guy that, you know, said, Jason, let's not do what ifs. Let's be actionable. So I got to hold myself to the same standard. What can MSPs do here?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say most MSPs, and I'm going to include myself in this case, don't have a good process or program around updating BIOS, UEFI firmware, and other things like this. And this is probably the wake-up call that we need to develop one, honestly.
Okay. Well, I think we've been sufficiently scared. Thanks.
It's a thing. Now that we're scared, can we talk about Skynet and AI?
Let's do it. I don't know if we have Skynet yet, and I really hope not with the number of security issues we've been seeing so far. And is this next top story, Meta AI models cracked open with exposed API tokens, written by Jaiva Jayan for Dark Reading. Researchers at Lasso Security unveiled significant security flaws in the widely used Hugging Face platform for LLMs. The discovery involved over 1,500 exposed API tokens, including those from Meta, Google, Microsoft, and VMware. Using these tokens, they were able to gain full read and write access to Meta's Bloom, Meta Llama, and Pythia LLM repositories. That might be Pythia LLM repositories. This access could have allowed malicious actors to steal models and datasets, poison training data, and potentially compromise millions of downstream users. Lasso promptly disclosed their findings, prompting affected organizations to swiftly revoke and remove exposed tokens. The researchers attributed this vulnerability to the lax security measures implemented by Hugging Face and the negligence of developers in protecting their access tokens. In addition, they called for increased awareness and training on securing LLMs and generative AI tools, and urged Hugging Face to take steps to better secure its platform. Jason, this isn't the first, the second, or even the third time an AI platform has been. So are we calling this a breach or a leak? This is.
I don't know. It's I've lost. Like, I'm not sure that we know enough people with fingers and toes to count the number of instances we've seen of API token loss, right? Like,
and I don't get that. Okay, so are we blaming, because the article is a little confusing. Are we blaming Meta for their control of the platform and lack of security? Or are we blaming the users for not securing their tokens? Because it wasn't really clear there.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to read more about it. But my guess is, based on how it does read so far, is that there was likely some sort of information disclosure vulnerability in Hugging API, or the Hugging frame kit that they're all using. Mm-hmm. And you're able to somehow make it spit out the API tokens that it's using for things, right? Like, that's usually the standard of these sorts of things. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, if you checked, and I think there was a story about this, right? Like, a lot of the language models ended up having API tokens in them. Because they consume publicly available data like source code, and that source code notoriously has also been bad about leaking API keys. So wouldn't it be funny if the API keys for these things were in the language models and they were actually able to just extract them from the language models themselves?
That would be a little terrifying. It seems like we don't even need this to get to Skynet level, because we're doing this to ourselves, right? Like, how much worse is it going to be when we have quantum computing that can actually do something, malicious with this data? That's going to be kind of terrifying.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, so much of this stuff is just a security third mindset, right? It's the case that no one is paying attention or enough attention to the software development lifecycle and code quality, and, you know, the basics, essentially, when we're living on the bleeding edge, right? Like, everyone is so excited to get these AI models out and to be the first and to be the one to monetize it and to be the winner, essentially, of this platform, this race, that they release what essentially becomes an MVP, and they haven't yet done proper security work on it.
So, okay, but today you're a security engineer and a business owner.
Yep.
So let me ask you, though, you know the race to beat your competition.
Yep.
You know but at the same time, you know the responsibility required in developing software and putting stuff out. Where's the line, right? Because over the last 18 months, everything's AI. Did you go to the bathroom? AI has some information on it. You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to do?
So the cynic in me, and the business owner part of the cynic in me, says that until you start seeing incidents like this make meaningful changes to valuations and stock valuations, nothing here will change. Meta's stock may take a very short-term hit on this news, and then tomorrow, when we're not talking about it anymore, it will come right back up and it will be forgotten. So there literally is no penalty for messing this up in any way. And as long as there's no penalty and the reward for being the first one is very high, this will continue to be a problem.
So, taking this back to productive, MSPs, this sounds to me like a policy thing, like an advisement and a policy thing. Are there any good sources for acceptable use, LLM or AI, generative AI, however you want to term it? Are there any good sources or policies around that MSPs could discuss with their clients?
I don't know. That's actually a really good question. I would say, you know, taking this back, you know, if you have customers or as an MSP, you are developing code, right? To take it back to where I think this is actually broken, which is in the platform, you should be following, you know, like the OWASP top 10, right? Like, you should be going through. And I think that what we need to see over time is we need to see things like the OWASP top 10 adapt to things like AI models, right? So, like, you know, how to not make mistakes incorporating AIs into your products too, because I believe we're probably going to see a whole class of security things that come with these AI as we start to integrate it more and more.
Sounds to me like we just figured out another MSP dispatch special report on how to come up with these policies for acceptable use. Yeah, but like we're saying, there's, you know, these companies are racing to implement AI because they're seeing insane profits from it, right?
Oh yeah, they are seeing insane profits, and that probably brings us to our final main story here. And yeah, that brings us to our final story. McKinsey sees AI adding up to a $340 billion Wall Street profit, brought to us by Aisha Ghani from Bloomberg. Generative artificial intelligence tools could potentially increase banks' annual earnings by up to $340 billion, resulting in a 9-15% rise in operating profits, reports McKinsey Global Institute. The corporate and retail banking sector stand to gain the most from adopting generative AI, which has the capability to take over repetitive tasks and enhance productivity. While the initial focus is on internal efficiencies, McKinsey anticipates a future shift towards customer-facing applications in the finance sector. Sales, marketing, software engineering, and call center roles are identified as areas likely to be affected, with up to 70% of business activities incorporating automation. Although AI adoption is growing in the financial industries, the impact on the workforce remains uncertain. Ray, I have a ton of thoughts on this, but I want your opinion on this first.
No, AI is good. Automation is good. It's not the, they're taking our jobs, because I'm so tired of that argument. You know what I mean? This to me, it seems like a lot of awesome. It seems like when you hear the security landscape has 500 billion dollars ready for anybody entering the job landscape. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I don't, nothing screams to me that anything different from what I've seen yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, for years I've been screaming, like, everyone goes like, oh, you know, all of our manufacturing jobs are being lost to foreign countries, right? But like, the actuality is we've lost our manufacturing jobs to automation, and it should surprise exactly zero people that that automation is now coming for white collar jobs, right? Like, I think that the groups that have the most to lose for this are some of the less developed countries that are providing a lot of that low cost manpower that is being used to do, you know, things like bulk coding and the non-fun parts of coding and the other things that you see associated with that, right? Because those are those repetitive, again, as this article calls out, those repetitive low thought jobs that are basically the equivalent of tech factory jobs are very much going to be replaced by automation.
And that makes perfect sense, because it's no different than, you know, during the industrial age. You know, these were the conveyor belts and these machines and these things were put in to remove the repetitive actions that honestly humans aren't really great at. Yeah. You know, there's a reason you need that little QC17 or QC sticker in your clothes, because we screw up. It just happens. But then again, you know, yes, you and I have come home from a long day of work and be like, oh, that was a rough day, I was tired. That is not the same as standing on your feet for 14 hours in front of a line or whatever. Yeah. That, you know what I mean? So if we can eliminate those jobs, but still provide equitable and actually decent pay for those people doing better jobs where they're not killing themselves standing in these manufacturing lines, why not? But that's always been the goal, right? And you're right. It is going to affect more people in lesser developed countries or countries that don't have as many office type jobs, right? Like the more meaningful stuff where they're selling based on cost. Yep. Now, does that mean that the professional level people that are traditionally kept in the US, maybe they're more at risk of being outsourced because those other markets could raise that skill level and that capacity? Could you see a world where that could possibly happen?
Oh, that'll 100% happen, right? I think it's on us, you know, to take a pie in the sky, everything can be awesome view on the world. I think it's on us as society to acknowledge the fact that changes in how we work will continue to happen as we evolve and as we get better at things. And it is on us as society to accept that that's going to happen, not try to prevent it from happening, because that's very counterproductive. And
it's evolution, right?
Yeah, be there to support the changes to the workforce that that are required to make that happen, right? Like, no one wants to be a coal miner, right? And the people that are coal miners now, and that's their job, they're very upset that coal mining is going away, right? But like, the next generation of people, like, no one wants to go into the coal mining business,
right? And every coal miner worker says the same thing. They want their kids to do better than them.
Yeah, 100%. So
this is what sets it up.
Yep. Let's build a framework that allows this to happen and doesn't completely disrupt the economy, and it doesn't completely disrupt society, because this will continue to happen as we, you know, as long as capitalism exists, people are going to strive to do more with less. And I generally think that's a good thing.
I agree. Intro the lazy programmer, the benefits of it. All right. So if you have comments about this or any of our other stories, hit us up in the comments or over on the MMN Discord, where we can continue the conversation. Both Jason and I are there. But for now, let's get in some notables.
Sounds great.
In my first notable mention, threat actors can leverage AWS STS to infiltrate cloud accounts. Written on Hacker's Newsroom. Threat actors can exploit Amazon Web Services Security Token Service, or AWS STS, to compromise cloud accounts, warned Red Canary researchers. Furthermore, AWS STS allows malicious actors to impersonate user identities and roles in cloud environments by acquiring temporary limited privilege credentials. These tokens, lasting 15 minutes to 36 hours, can be stolen through malware, exposed credentials, or phishing. Depending on permissions, threat actors may create additional users, ensuring persistence. After obtaining an MFA-authenticated STS token, they generate short-term tokens and conduct post-exploitation actions like data exfiltration. To address the threats, mitigation measures include logging CloudTrail event data, detecting role chaining and MFA abuse, as well as rotating long-term IAM user access keys. In my second notable mention, Apple confirms governments are using push notifications to surveil users. Written by Tim Hardwick for Mac Rumors. Apple has admitted that governments are using push notifications for surveillance, as revealed from a letter from Senator Ron Wyden to the Department of Justice. Wyden highlighted that tech giants are uniquely positioned to facilitate government surveillance through push notifications. Apple stated that, due to government restrictions, it couldn't share details but would update transparency reporting in light of public disclosure. The letter mentioned a tip as a source, and both U.S. and foreign governments have reportedly sought metadata related to push notifications, attempting to link anonymous users to specific Apple or Google accounts. The duration and specific governments involved remain undisclosed.
In my first notable, critical Bluetooth flaw exposes Android, Apple, and Linux devices to takeover, from Elizabeth Montalbano from Dark Reading. A critical Bluetooth vulnerability has been discovered affecting macOS, iOS, Android, and Linux devices. The flaw, identified as CVE-2023-45866, allows attackers to exploit a keystroke injection vulnerability, gaining remote control by tricking the Bluetooth host state machine into pairing with a fake keyboard without user confirmation. The unauthenticated pairing mechanism, as defined in the Bluetooth specification, exposes vulnerabilities across platforms. In particular, attackers can pair an emulated Bluetooth keyboard running as a Python script on a Linux computer, for example, to inject keystrokes on the target device. Despite existing for a decade, the flaw went unnoticed due to its simplicity. And while patches are available for some devices, others, including Apple Gear, remain vulnerable. And in my second notable, Microsoft PowerToys updates with new features, brought to us by Kevin Akamwa from Windows Central. Microsoft has rolled out the latest update for PowerToys, elevating its version to 0.76.0. This version introduces several enhancements, including a modernized PowerToys Run, Quick Accent, and Text Extractor UIs, offering improved functionalities. Highlights include a profile configurator, a homepage dashboard for efficient module access, and a powerful peak previewer supporting diverse file types based on installed hard handlers. Alongside these additions, the update addresses various bugs and incorporates overall improvements for a smoother user experience.
And now a clip from this week's episode of AI Roundup. I'm Phil Buck, your host of AI Roundup, a weekly digest of all things AI related. And for today's video, I wanted to highlight some news that I feel went under the radar with all the Sam Altman and OpenAI drama dominating the headlines the past week or so. Ed Newton Rex was the vice president of audio at Stability AI until a couple of weeks ago when he resigned and put out this statement. "I've resigned from my role leading the audio team at Stability AI because I don't agree with the company's opinion that training generative AI models on copyrighted works is fair use." I think it's really amazing to see someone at such a high level like Ed, who has been involved both in the creative industries and the tech industries, come out so strongly against the unethical training of AI models. His resignation wasn't a spur of the moment action. It was the culmination of a fundamental disagreement with Stability AI's stance on the use of copyrighted material for training AI. As Newton Rex points out, the broad interpretation of fair use by many AI companies, including Stability AI, is a controversial issue, especially when it involves scraping data from the internet without consent. What makes Ed's stance so significant is his background. He's not just a tech executive, he's a composer and a Cambridge alum, someone deeply rooted in the creative process. His perspective bridges the gap between technology and creativity, and it highlights a growing concern in the AI industry. How do we balance technological advancements with ethical considerations? At Stability AI, Ed led the development of Stable Audio, a generative AI tool for music creation. And this is where it gets interesting. Stable Audio was trained on licensed music, a dataset of over 800,000 files from Audio Sparks, that's with an X, ensuring that the training was ethical and legal. And while it's worth noting that Stable Audio was nominated by Time Magazine as one of the best inventions of the year for 2023, I tried it out, and while the ethical training is commendable, the outputs do leave a little something to be desired.
And our feedback from the YouTubes, Krenner Z says, if companies are not forced to update due to regulations, legal or insurance reasons, they don't. Yeah, you're right. I agree 100%.
There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. Later today at noon Eastern Time, Channel Engage, presented by the Channel Program. And then on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, live marketing training for MSPs presented by 7-Figure MSP. And on Tuesday the 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Rejection Con. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have later today at 11 a.m. Eastern, MSP Community Live is back with episode 19. And then on Monday the 11th at 10 a.m. Eastern, AI Roundup has got a new episode for you about how to utilize DALL-E 3 the best. Is it Bing or ChatGPT? And then on Thursday the 14th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the Tech Bar Podcast is back to welcome special guest Megan Killian of MKC Agency.
So how'd you like today's show? If you liked it, hit the thumbs up button. If you didn't, hit it 3, 5, 7 times. You know the deal. And if you want to hear more, go and hit the subscribe button on the YouTubes or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know we also have a Discord where we post stories all week? You can propose your own stories and even vote on which ones we'll cover. As my friend Rich Banky says, make sure to tell a friend. Also be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. Have any questions? Email news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode. Or leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-Network. All right, Jason, Mr. Not Tony, I appreciate you covering. Or we're just going to start calling you Tony with a beard.
I'll take it. I can only aspire to be a third as attractive as Tony ever is. So,
yeah, that's the... I'm still not sure if my wife watches MSP Dispatch for me or for Tony. Ignorance is bliss. But I'm glad for everybody that watches MSP Dispatch and talks in the comments and talks over on our Discord. So, Jason, what are you going to do first? Are you going to update Eufy firmware, or are you going to see if you can get some AI tokens?
Probably ought to start building a plan to upgrade UEFI's firmware, right? Especially on servers. We'll start there. We'll move to workstation next.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for being part of this. The best news in MSP industry. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
Mm. This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
I don't know if we're at Skynet yet, and I really hope not, because the amount of security issues is a little frightening. The Meta AI models were cracked open, and the good thing is, like we were talking about with these businesses, AI is insanely profitable, right?
It is insanely profitable. The companies that are doing this have probably artificially inflated valuations. What was that?
That was a lead into your next story.
Oh. You're muted.
Can we find some AI that when I start talking, it just unmutes? That'd be phenomenal.